We're told that Charles Dickens came to the United States in 1868 for a reading tour. He gave 76 readings in the States and earned £20,000. In January and February, he appeared in Philadelphia at the Concert Hall at 1217 Chestnut Street. The building was 50 feet wide, had a stone block facing, and three high-arched windows in the front. Tickets were $2 each. Philadelphia acted much the same way that it acts today when tickets for an important rock concert go on sale. The night before the tickets were to be sold, 50 people were camped out on the sidewalk in the 18-degree cold, securely established with mattresses, blankets, and whiskey. The first six readings were sold out in 4 hours. Hundreds of people were disappointed, and scalpers who managed to get their hands on tickets resold them for exorbitant prices. The concert hall on Chestnut Street could only hold 1,400 people. Nevertheless, the newspapers of the day reported the audience could not have been more select. It was made up of the elite of the city, and seldom had the same number of persons, representing every department of literature, art, science, and business, and the better class of society, been assembled at a place of amusement in this city. There were many reasons why Philadelphians wanted to see Dickens. He was a famous writer, and he had brought about reform. But a major reason was that they were forewarned that he was an extraordinary performer. The Philadelphia Press had already printed articles about him that described him as a brilliant reader, a master of the histrionic art, and a luminary of the European platform. During all his Philadelphia readings, Dickens had what he called an intolerable cold, but his audiences did not suspect anything was amiss. Indeed, the Evening Bulletin of February 14th noted, "Mr. Dickens was evidently in the best of humors." Little did they know how enormously high Dickens worked up his pulse, so intense were his readings. He had advertised for six readings in the concert hall. On Monday, January 13th, he read A Christmas Carol and The Trial from Pickwick. On Tuesday the 14th, it was from David Copperfield and Mr. Bob Sawyer's Party from Pickwick. On Thursday, he read At Mr. Squeer's School from Nicholas Nickleby, and The Boots at the Holly Tree Inn. The next night, he read his story of Little Dombey and repeated The Trial from Pickwick. The readings started at 8 o'clock each evening and lasted about 2 hours. The stage setting was simple and had been designed by Dickens. A maroon screen ran along the back, extending to the wings. A carpet was on the floor to assist with the acoustics. Above Dickens' head was a row of gas jets which illuminated him and his books, but which were screened so that they threw no glare into the audience's eyes. A reading desk, about 2 feet by 3 feet and 3 feet high, held his books, a pitcher of water, and a glass. Illuminated by the bright lights, framed and thrown into relief by the dark backdrop, and obstructed little by the table and its appointments, he could register on the audience every movement in all his body. The Inquirer called the arrangement a model of convenience and a gem of invention. At 8 o'clock sharp, Dickens would walk onto the stage without any announcement. He carried the books quickly to his reading desk, put the books down, bowed, smiled, and waited for the applause to stop. It was a long wait. He wanted to begin, but the normally reserved Philadelphians lauded him with cheer after cheer and roar after roar. When at last the audience had shown their approval, he would pick up a book, open it, look at the audience, and say, "Ladies and gentlemen, I am happy to have the honor of reading to you tonight." Name the work and begin reading. The audiences, expecting a lengthy introduction, overtures, and pomp and flourishes, were at first taken aback. But very quickly, Charles Dickens vanished from the stage and his characters took his place. One moment he would be old, gruff Scrooge, and the next he would be timid Bob Cratchit, then hearty, good-natured Fred. His years of theatrical training, from the toy theater of his childhood through the amateur theatricals, were paying off. Frederick Troutman, in his paper on public readings, records that Philadelphians saw in Dickens a reader expressive in each glance and every movement. His manner, though conversational, was active, flexible, varied, and emphatic. He could convey pathos, fun, tenderness, or caricature with equal force. Most expressive were his eyes and his hands, but especially his eyes. The press of January 24th admired his eyes. Wonderful eyes they are, that, as the story and the character demand, droop, gleam, shine, blaze, and glare. Performing mostly from memory, Dickens seldom referred to his text, and his eloquent eyes were continually on the audience. When reading A Christmas Carol, he used his hands and his eyes to describe the dancing at Fezziwig's ball and put his whole self into the mashing of the potatoes, the sweetening of the applesauce, and the dusting of the plates. That from two centuries of Dickens in Philadelphia in 2007. Claire Joelle grew up in the Philadelphia area, and she was immersed in the stories of Charles Dickens, especially A Christmas Carol. And now she has taken on the responsibility of directing this classic story at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre with shows this weekend and next. And she stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about the adaptation that's been chosen. But first, a bit about the history of the theater itself.
We are going into our 104th consecutive season. We made it through everything, including COVID. It's mostly volunteer run. We have a board of directors, so everything is, it's done by the community. It's done by the community. It's done for the community. A lot of history. The building is very old. I'm actually looking into getting it onto the historic registry. I am also on the board, so I'm presenting that at our next board meeting because the building is beautiful. So the building itself is just as historical as the theater is.
The responsibility of any community theater is to, if they can, present something for the holiday to brighten people's spirits. And it must be a job to say, well, are we going to do A Christmas Carol again? How did the thinking go in building this season about the December show?
So since 2017, we have done A Christmas Carol every other year. And then in the off year, we do a different Christmas show. So like Annie or It's a Wonderful Life. But every other year, we do A Christmas Carol because it is such a classic. It is such a well-known show and a well-known story. It's almost impossible to have Christmas without A Christmas Carol in some form. So we don't want to overdo it, though. So we don't do it every year.
And because it is a classic and because people know the story, there are different ways to approach it. And you are the director, so you have a chance to have a vision for the telling of this. And this is a particular adaptation that you all have chosen.
Yes. The adaptation we chose for this year is the adaptation written by Romulus Linney. It stays very true to the heart of the novel, which was very important to me because I initially fell in love with the novel. I grew up in Philadelphia. My mother was a member of the Philadelphia Dickens Society. And when I was a child, I used to actually see live readings by Charles Dickens' great-great-grandson, Gerald Dickens. And of course, I'm up at Christmas Carol. You can't ever not watch that one. But A Christmas Carol was such a huge part of my childhood. We would go to Dickens Village and we would see all the animatronic puppets. So, I mean, it was such a huge part of my childhood. And then growing up, it's consistently been a part of my Christmas every year. So I've got deep roots with A Christmas Carol.
So what does Linney do in getting to the heart of the story? How does that unfold on the stage then?
A lot of the lines that he uses in his play are taken directly from the novel. So that's clearly page to stage. What he does is he takes the heart of the novel, which is the compassion that Scrooge eventually develops. You can see the gradual process when the ghosts take Scrooge through past, present, and potential future. It really sticks to, these are the things that you have done these are the things that you are doing now, and this is what you will become. And it really hits home the idea of compassion and charity and finding, even later in life, that it's not too late to change. It's not too late to make positive motions in the world and become a better person. And I feel like that does translate across all of the Christmas carols, but this one does stay very true to the meat of the initial novel.
The size of the cast, is that the same as you would do with people out in the street and all of those?
It's pretty large. I am a relatively new director, and the last show that I directed, which was Pillow Man, we only had 6 or 7 people. So going from a very small cast to now having 29 people has been quite a challenge for me. It's definitely been a learning process. Initially, I think we had 46 speaking roles, and I narrowed it down to 29 cast members.
And what about the setting then? Are we going to be overwhelmed with the turkey and the banquet and all of that vision of plenty, that sort of thing?
We are trying. David Parmalee is my set designer and my set builder. He's also the general manager of the theater, and he's been extremely helpful. We sat down and went through the script scene by scene and figured out what we wanted, what we envisioned, and he's been bringing that to life. And we do have a lot of the main stage itself is like a Victorian street scene, essentially. And then we have things that we're bringing and adding to that. So like the schoolhouse scene in the Christmas past, we're going to have just a chair and a desk. So it kind of goes back and forth between being broad and Victorian London and all the Christmas cheer, but also being pretty minimalist in some places. So it kind of goes back and forth.
One of my favorite scenes is the Fezziwig party. Will you have dancing and Fezziwig and music and all of that?
Yes, I actually have been working with my cast in rehearsal this week on a Victorian reel line dance that they're doing in the Fezziwig party scene. So that's been a lot of fun, actually.
We know there are children in the Cratchit family. Have you been able to draw on some of the young people who have gone through Little Theater's educational program? Where did Tiny Tim come from, for example?
And they all came out for auditions, and we had just enough kids to fill all the roles that I needed, so it was perfect. And Tiny Tim, her name is Grace Utichak. She's adorable. I knew the moment I saw her, I was like, you are our Tiny Tim. So it was perfect. It worked out really well.
What about that moment when we've all been through everything with Scrooge and the rest of the crew, and it's time to say that line, that powerful line, Little Tiny Tim, without being sentimental? Does your Tiny Tim just deliver it without any complication?
It's very sweet. It's very sweet. Maybe a little sentimental, but not saccharine.
Dickens wanted to play with our heartstrings, didn't he?
Yep, though every time I see it, I'm just, it reminds me what we're doing here.
And describe your Scrooge for us. And the ability that your Scrooge as an actor has to go through that transformation.
Oh, he's fantastic. Our Scrooge, his name is Eddie Reynolds. This is actually his return to the stage for the first time in quite a long time. And the moment I saw him on stage, I knew he was my Scrooge. He has such a fantastic stage presence. He auditioned with a Shakespearean monologue, and from right off the bat, I knew. The first time we ever did the final scene with Scrooge, the redemption scene, it was astounding seeing that transition in his acting ability to go from the miserly, grumpy, angry Scrooge to this completely transformative, charitable person. It was just, it was amazing.
And we believe it as
yes,
a result, right?
Very, very believable.
What about the women characters? Now we have Mrs. Fezziwig and Little Fan, all of those things. They're not just props.
So coming from this, from the perspective of a person who works in mental health, I did kind of dig a little bit into the psychology behind Scrooge and what makes him who he is and the way he is. So like in particular, you speak of Fan, and in this play, her name is Fan. We speak of Fan and of Belle, Scrooge's one great love. And the nice thing about the Lineage adaptation is that you can see in these scenes how these characters who are what you would consider side characters actually have these huge impacts on Scrooge as a person. You can kind of see how these things have culminated to make him bitter, to make him angry, to make him a nihilist, essentially. And there's a reason for it. He didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to be a grump and go around saying bah humbug all the time. Like, there were things that led up to that.
And you don't have to do anything to underscore the injustice and the poverty and the discrepancy between classes and so on, because Dickens writes it that way.
No, I mean, Dickens does mention workhouses, and he does use the Cratchit family to show an example of what it was like to be a family living in poverty back then. There's a bit of a context with the workhouses, though I don't think people realize at this point in history about that time in London, where when if you were poor, if you were living in poverty, you didn't get help from the parliament or government or whatever it was. You were put in a workhouse. Conditions were horrible. There wasn't a whole lot of what we know now as state assistance. So, but they do show it through Cratchit and things such as that. You do get an idea of what it was like to live in poverty at that time.
What about Dickens' language?
Oh, he's so funny. He's so funny. And that was the thing that surprised me the most. Whenever I read something by him, he is witty. He really is. And you think about literature written in the 19th century and you think, oh, it's all like big flowery sentences and boring long paragraphs. But no, he's witty. He's got some puns.
When people go to see a movie made from a book, they often want to go then and get the book and read the book. I wonder if seeing any version of A Christmas Carol on stage would make someone want to go and get the book. Have you ever heard of that?
I hope so. I always encourage. I'm one of those people who I have to read the book before I see the movie or see the play of something. So I hope it does inspire people to go out. And it's not a long book. It's, what, 150 pages? Very easy to read. You can even get it in an audiobook and read it while you're driving. So.
And when you say you heard the descendant of Dickens reading A Christmas Carol, Dickens himself made a tour, at least one tour, of the United States reading A Christmas Carol, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I mean, that's part of why Gerald Dickens continues that tradition to this day, is because his great-great-grandfather would do that. So it's a very nice thing to have been able to witness.
And overall, I would think, even though it's hard at this time for anyone to be committed to doing a play with a run and learning lines and rehearsals and so forth, that this is the kind of piece that would, because it is such a heartwarming piece, your cast would say, no, we love it. We love doing it. It's wonderful because it is that, and they know that people will probably be responding. And if it isn't already a tradition, might become a tradition in people's, in viewers, audiences' lives.
Oh, for sure. A lot of them have given up a lot of very valuable holiday time to be at rehearsals 4 or 5 nights a week, especially at this time of year. I think we got 4 days off for Thanksgiving, and then we've been at it pretty much every weekday since then. So you got to be really dedicated if you are committed to that kind of thing. And I'm so grateful to my cast for being so wonderful and doing this and being here for this.
We mentioned Fezziwig's Ball, but is there any other music involved in your production?
Yes, we do have a little bit of Christmas caroling. It's not anything that I would call a musical, or it's not anything that would be excessive. But there are a few parts throughout the play where there is a little bit of singing.
And when you started, you talked about the real distinctive nature of the Romulus-Linney adaptation. And we can understand that focusing on that heart-centered message would speak perennially to any age. But what do you think about seeing it as it's coming together and having read the script over and over and pulling it all together? What do you think it might say to us, particularly at this time in our lives?
I think especially at this time, not just this time of the year, but this time in history, it's so important to remember the heart of charity and compassion and taking care of those who are in need. I heard somebody say something once recently that really stuck with me, and it's, we don't help people because they deserve it. We help people because they need it. And I really think that's the core of the message, is there's a lot of people who need help, and we can't look at it as, did they deserve it or not?
Do you think theater has the power to affect us as an audience member on some level with a message like that?
I like to think so. It's a huge part of why I do it. Every show I do, I hope that the audience takes away a message from it that goes out and helps make the world a better place.
We know this is an old and wonderful building. Tell us where it is and when you'll be playing.
So we are at 537 North Main Street in Wilkes-Barre, and the play is going to be performed December 12th through 21st, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Fridays and Saturdays are at 8 o'clock p.m., and Sundays are at 3 o'clock. And you can buy tickets at ltwb.org, or you can call our box office at 570-823-1875.
Anything else you'd like our audience to know?
I mean, the only thing else I would say is it was a tradition during Victorian times to, when it was Christmas time, you would sit around a fire and you would tell ghost stories. So A Christmas Carol is a really cool continuation of that tradition.
Claire Joel, who is directing the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre production of A Christmas Carol, the adaptation by Romulus Linney. And there are performances December 12th through the 21st. And showtimes Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 at Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, 537 North Main Street. And for more information, ltwb.org, ltwb.org. Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre presenting Romulus Linney's A Christmas Carol, directed by Claire Joel. And the performances are December 12th through the 21st, Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3. And you can find the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre at 537 North Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. For more information, ltwb.org.